It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 263. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I do our West Coast Conference men's basketball preview. We talk about which players we think are going to be the most problematic for BYU and which teams we think BYU might lose to. And we also handicap BYU's chances to get into the NCAA tournament. Also on today's show, Jimmer's chances in the NBA, awards for the football team, the college football playoff, and looking again back at Ty Detmer's first year as offensive coordinator. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, and listen to us right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, you like Star Wars.
I love Star Wars. It's becoming a love.
I think you're becoming a Star Wars geek.
I'm not sure I'm ready to go that far.
Okay, let's examine the facts, okay? Did you see Rogue One on opening night?
I did.
All right.
Yes, okay. I did.
All right. Now, I know there was a little bit of luck involved in that one, but let's just stick
with the facts. It was the last night before the semester ended, and I was moving in 2 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't mind taking my son out to a late movie that night.
Late movie. Right. Okay.
It just happened to be the opening day of Rogue One.
All right. Fact number two. You now own and are planning on reading several novels that are part of the Star Wars universe. Is that a fact?
That is a fact.
Okay, let me ask you another question. All right. We'll finish with this question. When episode 8 comes out, what is the percent chance you see it opening weekend?
Opening weekend?
Opening weekend.
100%. Crap.
Man, there's no way around this. I'm not going to say you're like president of the Star Wars fan club or something, though maybe you could look into that at the Baton Rouge chapter, but you've become kind of a geek. This is something that, this is new. This is a new you.
I didn't see it coming. I didn't see this coming at all. I don't know what to say.
Well, can I get you with a question that might make you more comfortable?
Yeah, here we go. Let's do that.
Let's jump into the tweet bag. You big geek.
Tweet bag.
Justin Whiting, that's at JN Whiting on Twitter, asks us, dang, he thinks he got a little too late. I probably missed. Is that a slang term, probably?
Probably.
I don't know. He thinks he missed it, but do you hate more IU or Utah? He says, go Hoosiers. Of course, Justin is a Hoosier.
A Hoosier as in an Indiana University Hoosier,
correct.
Not just a,
not
resident,
a resident
of the state of Indiana.
The state of Indiana. It is confusing. Say, like in Utah, you don't call people there Utes, right? That's a tribe.
No, you have a Utahn.
You have a Utahn. But in Indiana, or like in Massachusetts where we grew up, you don't call people Minutemen. That's the mascot
of
the
school. There's another term for people from Massachusetts.
Yes.
It's a family-friendly show.
Yes, it's a family-friendly
show. We'll leave that alone.
We'll leave that out. Boston Batman can explain it to you sometime. Matt, so do you hate Utah or IU more? It's really easy for me, but I'll let you answer first.
I hate Utah more.
I don't actually hate IU. I am a Purdue fan, and I root against the Hoosiers, meaning the school, not the state. But, you know, I almost went to IU to business school. I chose between those two schools, and I don't even hate Indiana University. So for me, it's not even close. So
yeah, I very easily could have ended up at IU for business school as well. But I will go ahead and just use this as an opportunity to say IU sucks.
That is also a fact.
I'm all in. I got all in on the Purdue train. So
or Purdue's basketball
I
team.
I don't hate IU, except for when they play Purdue in basketball.
Well, I'll tell you what, Purdue's basketball team. I've watched them several times this year. 11-2. The Massey ratings have them as a top 15 team. That could be a Elite Eight squad right there.
It's a good team. They are very good.
Fun to watch. Fun to watch. We'll talk a little bit more basketball later on the show. Matt, I just wanted to, Ryan, if you're new or found us through some, you know, through Facebook or something, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. So go to iTunes and search Rise and Shout podcast, and you will find us, and you can subscribe to us. You can also do that in any popular podcasting app. So if you happen upon us, welcome, and go subscribe so you get our awesome goodness every week.
And it is awesome goodness, isn't it?
It is. It is really good. So, Matt, without further ado, let's get to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, just as a reminder, men's volleyball starts their season against Lewis on January 6th, so that is coming up in another week, so that is exciting. Of course, you'll be able to catch a lot of their games this year on BYU TV. Women's basketball has struggled a little bit. They're 6-5 after a loss to Washington. They start West Coast Conference play at Santa Clara on Thursday of this week. We're recording Tuesday evening, and then they host Loyola Marymount on Saturday. Matt, let's go to Cougars in the pros. With the first pick in the NFL draft, the terrible and awful New York Jets select. Matt, the New York Jets are terrible, so let's start there. Kyle Van Noy.
So bad.
He had 7 tackles against the terrible Jets. And Matt, this is basically like a scrimmage for the Patriots, and they still won 41 to whatever it was. The Jets are terrible, but Kyle Van Noy continues to play a pretty significant factor in the New England Patriots defense.
Hey, at the end of the game, he was calling the defense. I mean, I know it was garbage time, but...
It's a really good sign, actually, for him.
Yeah, it looks to me like they're trying to develop him.
I think they see him as, we talked about this before, I think he's the next Mike Vrabel. Don't you? That's the role of just kind of put him all over the field. He might be in pass coverage. He might be rushing. It might be against a run blitz or some type of run prevention defense. But that's how they're using him. He's not totally integrated at that level. But, you know, their defense is not easy to learn, and he has picked it up pretty well. Sticking with BYU great defensive players from that era, Ziggy Ansah is back, Matt.
Yes, I saw the sack. It was awesome.
Second week in a row that he's had a sack, 7 tackles, 1 tackle for loss in a loss against the Cowboys, though he did, as you pointed out, sack Dak Prescott, who is one of the big surprises in the NFL in 2016. Though, if you listened to the podcast last year that we did with Emery Hunt, who's an NFL scout, number one, he thought Kyle Van Noy would get another shot somewhere and be good in that podcast. He mentioned that. But he also said Dak Prescott would be the best quarterback out of that class.
So listen, Emery Hunt knows his stuff.
He did.
I think that if you're on Twitter, you need to go seek him out. He's got good stuff out there.
Good stuff. We'll have him on again.
The other thing I'll say is this, is if you watched the Lions and the Cowboys.
Which I did.
It was just a couple plays. I think the tackle for a loss was just a couple plays after the sack. Where it was a handoff to Elliott, and Ziggy got into the backfield and just grabbed him and stopped him dead in his tracks. I mean, he is so strong. I mean, it's just crazy.
When I had seen him a couple games earlier in the year, Detroit plays in the same division as hometown Minnesota Vikings, so I get, unfortunately, some of their games, which usually unfortunate, except I get to see Ziggy. He looked slow earlier this season. He did not look slow this week. He looked great. Like you said on that tackle against Elliott, he looks like the Ziggy who had been, you know, headed towards, you know, perennial Pro Bowl Hall of Fame type of level. And 2 sacks 2 weeks in a row, so Ziggy might be back. Dennis Pitta, Matt, had 8 catches for 75 yards against the Steelers. Do you root when the Ravens play the Steelers? Is that like Satan facing off against the Emperor? Like, can you pick a winner in that one?
What an awful analogy. one of these teams has to be Satan in the analogy you just said. You know, I don't hate any college football team that much.
You mean pro football team?
Oh, sorry. I was still thinking about how I, when we were asked if you hate Utah or
okay,
IU.
Okay, fine. More. Voldemort versus Darth Vader.
Yeah, that's a little better, I guess. Yeah, but that's what it's like.
I kind of like the Ravens being Satan. No? Too much?
Way too much.
Way too much? All right. Okay, yeah. Fine. Fine, you big baby. Matt watched some of the Chiefs versus the Broncos this weekend. I watched a lot of football this weekend.
Oh, man.
Daniel Sorensen, another good game, had a forced fumble, a couple of tackles for loss. Matt, he is out there quite a bit. I don't have the snap counts in front of me. They rotate their defensive backs quite a bit, but he also plays kind of this hybrid role where he will play at the line of scrimmage, almost like a linebacker in a dime or nickel package. So Sorensen had a nice game against the reigning NFL champions.
Awesome.
All right, so moving on to the Chinese Basketball League, because we always talk about the Chinese Basketball League.
Who doesn't want to talk Chinese basketball? I mean, seriously.
Brian Taylor has a tweetback question for us off Facebook. He says, Jimmer is putting up incredible numbers in China. We've talked about that on previous podcasts. So here's his question. Is there any possible way he ever finds his way back onto an NBA roster as a bench player to come off as a, say, backup point guard or even a starting point guard based on how he performed in China? Or does his game as a dominant scorer not fit well in the NBA? Brian has a hard time believing he wouldn't be an asset in a team needing scoring off the bench for 15 or 20 minutes a game as a backup guard. He also says that he thought Jimmer did not ever get a great shot there. Is it better for Jimmer, he asked, to come back? Or does he just get his jersey retired in China and call it that? Matt, we've talked about this a little bit, but I'd love your feedback now. Chance that he comes back at some point this season, or we'll even expand it to next year if he continues playing at high level in China and then plays a meaningful role with an NBA team?
I don't think he's coming back to the NBA. I think that Jimmer's NBA days are done. He's going to go. He's going to stay over there, or maybe he'll go somewhere in Europe, and he'll do well. And he's dominating this league in China. I think that he got as much of a look in the NBA as he's going to get. You know, whether or not he got a fair shake, whether or not he got any real legitimate opportunities, or what the issues were, you know, that's a separate conversation, I guess. But I think he's done in the NBA.
Yeah, I think there is a chance, not a very good one, that he gets a chance, that he gets a good opportunity in the NBA. I think it's more likely next season, though. You never know with injuries and things for a potential playoff team if it would happen. Brian does point out that there is maybe an issue with him in the NBA because he has to, I think to be the most effective, he has to have the ball in his hand a lot, right? Offensively. I think we've talked about this before. His biggest problem is the other end of the floor, not the offense. I think people like the offense in the NBA. And I think he could be a Vinny Johnson or, you know, some sixth man coming off the bench for 15, 20 minutes a game offensively. I just think defense is the problem. I think it's more likely that he gets his jersey retired in China than he ever has a meaningful role on an NBA team.
Yes.
All right. So, Matt, we're going to move into our West Coast Conference preview. Coming up after that, we will talk some football. But before that, we're gonna dive deep into the West Coast Conference, Matt. Deep. All right? You ready?
Wow. Let's do this.
Okay. So, Matt, I have put together a list of six players to watch for in the West Coast Conference who do not play for BYU. Okay?
All right.
So, Matt, according to sportsreference.com and their player efficiency rating, coming into conference play, the West Coast Conference has three of the best five big men in all of college basketball. Of course, we know Eric Mika has made the leap into that stratosphere. So, Matt, let's talk about the two other big men that BYU will face this year against against the two best teams we'll play. The first one is Karnowski. I don't even know how to say his first name. You served a mission somewhere in the world.
Does anybody ever say his first name?
Prezimek?
I don't know how to say that. Come on, are you kidding me? I don't know that I've ever heard it uttered out loud.
I don't know that I have either, actually, to be honest. Obviously, Karnowski, 7-1, almost 12 points, 6 boards, 2 assists a game, shooting 55% from the floor. Matt, he is a beast. Now, I don't think he's as good as Sabonis was, and I don't think he's reset. Well, I don't know if he'll ever get that good, but Karnowski is quite good. I am not as fearful of him as I am a couple of other players on this list against BYU, because as soon as we've got, why can't I think of his name right now? Corbin Kafusi back, we have a bunch of bodies to throw at Karnowski in that game. Mika will not have to guard him, and we can just throw and hack. He's a decent free throw shooter, but not a great one. So I'm not as worried about Karnowski as I am about some other people on this list. What do you think of Karnowski against BYU?
I think Karnowski presents a formidable challenge. I don't know that I buy that that having Kafusi on the roster neutralizes the issue or prevents Mika from having to really guard. I think Mika may have to guard him at some point because Kafusi is going to foul out.
Yeah. Yeah, Kafusi will foul out in all four of the games against St. Mary's and Gonzaga.
Yes. And so I think we do have bodies to throw at him, but I think that's going to be tough. But I don't know that he is the one that strikes fear in me the most of the players on your list.
Okay, fair enough. Last year, of course, Karnowski had some... So kind of up and down against BYU last year. So Sabonis was the one that gave us absolute fits, as there was really nobody we could guard him. And then Sabonis, remember when he switched on to Collinsworth and basically shut down KC?
Yes, that was insane.
Terrible.
Where is Sabonis now? I don't keep track of that stuff.
I don't know. Sabonis, put it into the Google machine. Sabonis. He is with the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's right.
Wow, look at him.
If I remember right, as far as playing time, last time I looked up, but now the internet is being slow. I don't think he's playing a ton, but he's in the rotation. But we'll let the Google machine come. But man, he was a heck of a player to watch in college. So. About 19, 20 minutes a game, so he's in the rotation. 6 points a game, so he's having a good... It's not a bad rookie start to the year. Picked 11th overall, of course, in the last year's NBA draft. Matt, the next big man on the list is a guy that I think will be... Hopefully people know who he is, but I think is a little bit more of a surprise of how well he's played so far this year, because he was good last year, but not as good. Jock Longdale, that is not a fake name, that's a real name. He's from Australia. Put another shrimp on the barbie. come on. Joke? You get it? Reference?
Yeah, except in the movie he's making that joke about somebody from Austria.
I know.
Like,
it would be funnier if he was from Austria. I get it.
It'd be really funny if he was from Austria, but the fact that he's actually from Australia kind of kills it, no?
I should have made the joke about Karnowski.
Damn. Yes.
Even though he's not from Austria either. So Longdale, Matt, so far this year, he's 6'11". He's a big dude. 18 points, almost 10 boards, 2 assists. He's shooting 63% from the floor. He's hitting some threes, though that's not a huge part of his game. And he is 80%. According to sportsreference.com, he is the best big man in college basketball statistically right now.
Yep.
So I don't know that we have a good answer for him.
This is the one that scares me. Of all the guys on your list, this is the guy that scares me the most.
Yeah, this is not This is a dangerous player. I think we do have, unlike last year and the last few years, we do have a bunch of fouls to work with. Not a great solution when the guy shoots 80% from the free throw line. Okay, so that is not necessarily what you want to do, unlike say a Karnowski or some other big men where you might play. But the other part is, you know, you look at this guy right now. He is, as of today, the fourth best player in basketball according to player efficiency rating. I mean, it's amazing how well he's played so far this year, and he may end up being the, depending on who we play, you know, in tournaments, if we make it to the NCAA tournament and stuff, he may end up being the best player we see all year. So you are right to be frightened. You're right to be frightened. Matt, next on my list, and these are not necessarily in any particular order, is Brett Bailey. He's a 6'5 swing man from San Diego, 19 points a game, 7 boards, 2.5 assists, 49% from the field, a really good 3-point shooter at 44%, 80% from the charity stripe. Of these players, Matt, he's probably the one we've heard the least of, and I think he will absolutely light BYU up, but it won't matter. We'll probably beat San Diego twice. But yep. he is good, and we have nobody that I think can guard him well, so we're probably better off shutting everything else down when we play them. The next player is Ronnie Boyce, the third. Do you ever wish you were the third?
Not even a little bit.
Never? You don't want to have the third? You didn't want to name one of your kids the fourth?
No.
Okay. Boyce is a 6'3 guard, 16 points a game, 5 boards, 2 assists, a decent 3-point shooter, not a great 3-point free throw shooter, Matt. He is the guy that's given us trouble in the past. UCF is a team that scares me. I think San Francisco may be the fourth best team in the conference, and this is a player that, again, I haven't seen a lot of evidence that we can handle this type of perimeter player, Matt. Do you disagree?
I think that it presents a unique challenge.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm more scared of him. Well, no, I'm about to overstate this. I was going to put him in a Karnowski category.
I put him in Karnowski.
I think because the challenge he presents is different than a couple of these big guys, and I don't think we have an answer for it either.
I put him in Karnowski's category, but the difference is Gonzaga is so deep that if you shut down Karnowski, it may not make any difference to the outcome of the game, right?
Right. I
mean, they are arguably right now playing at such a high level, they may be a top five team, okay? So Karnowski may be their best player, but the difference between him and the next two or three guys isn't that great. On San Diego, on San Francisco, if you're able to shut Boyce down, the difference between him and their next best player is really steep. And the difference between their next best player and that third best player and Boyce is like a chasm, right? So I'm with you. Karnowski's Karnowski level of good. The difference is who's playing with him, right? Speaking of a guy who's good but unfortunately is on a terrible team, Chris Reyes of Pepperdine, 6'7 guy, 15 points, 8 boards, 2 assists a game. He's shooting 62% from the field, also just 63% from the free throw line, Matt. Great player. Pepperdine's terrible. Might be the worst team in the league. So unfortunately, when you see Chris, you'll have that feeling of, wow, he's one of the best players in the WCC, and wow, they're bad. Which they are. They're quite bad. Matt, maybe the most concerning guy on this list, just because we want to beat Gonzaga, is Nigel Williams-Goss, the 6'3 guard for Gonzaga. 14 points, 6 boards, 5 assists a game. He's kind of like, you know, Kyle Collinsworth. He does a little bit of everything for them. Scores, rebounds, assists, shoots well, 88% free throw shooter. Matt, this is another guy I don't think we have an answer for. I think he will eat BYU up.
Yeah, this is the guy that kills us if we're able to shut down Karnowski. This is the guy that makes it so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, Matt, let's jump back into the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Actually, it's the hashtag pain bag, okay? Gary Payne, that's at Fast Break GP. He asks, most likely candidate to beat us aside from St. Mary's or Gonzaga. So, Matt, I'm going to break this down into tiers for us, all right? Tier one of the West Coast Conference is undoubtedly Gonzaga and St. Mary's. Any arguments there?
Nope.
They are by far the class. I did not think St. Mary's would be as good as they've been this year. Obviously, they've got one ugly loss on their resume so far, but a lot of good play. I don't think they may lose to Gonzaga three times this year and still be a really good team. Now, I think they beat Gonzaga at least once. How about you?
I think that they do. I think you split that.
I think they split the regular season, but then Gonzaga, as usual, just takes it home in the conference tournament. We'll get to our predictions here in a minute. Matt, that next tier is Brigham Young University. You may have heard of them.
I have heard of them. As a matter of fact, I matriculated from this university.
Matriculated? Did you early matriculate, or did you late matriculate, or regular matriculate?
I'm not even sure I know what the answer to that question is.
I don't even know what I'm talking about. Matt, I think we're in a tier by ourselves. I don't think any of the rest of the league, similar to some of these past years, is really that close to BYU. Fair, or do you think I'm overplaying BYU's hands?
I think it's fair. Okay. I mean, if you look at who you have here in this next tier, I mean, I don't see us losing. That's probably not the right way to say this, but I think we probably beat the teams in the next tier twice.
Okay. The next tier, I have just two teams there, Matt. San Francisco and Loyola Marymount. And then I basically have everybody else. Here's my feeling. A loss to San Francisco on the road is not good, but I don't think it's terrible for our resume. A loss to Loyola Marymount on the road, not good, but not terrible. A loss on any floor to anybody else might keep us out of the tournament. Fair?
Yep, I think that's fair to say.
Do you think we lose any games to San Francisco or Loyola Marymount?
If we were to run through the schedule and do win-loss...
Oh, we're going to.
I would predict both games against both of those teams as wins.
Okay.
But they're not...
They're going to lose. They're going to lose a conference game, at least one, I believe, to somebody not named Gonzaga or St. Mary's.
And I think it's going to be to San Francisco.
Yeah, me too.
If I had to predict one, maybe when we run through, I will say that game on the road is a loss. I don't know. You're going to have to stay tuned to find out.
Now, last year, we had some bad losses, okay? There was the Pepperdine loss. There was that Pacific loss, which that may be... That loss, we talked about this earlier in the year, may be the worst loss of Dave Rose's career last year.
Yeah, that was like a burn the couches in the street loss.
Yeah, I mean, it was in the Marriott Center to Pacific, right?
Right.
And obviously, we also lost to Loyola Marymount on the road last year. The other conference losses were against Gonzaga and St. Mary's. You're not too worried about that. So five losses in the conference last year. Matt, I think they need to only have one loss, not to Gonzaga St. Mary's. I think they can get swept by Gonzaga St. Mary's and make the tournament. If you get swept by those guys, don't pick up a win, quality win, and then you lose two or three of these conference games to lesser foes, I think you're running really close and giving the committee a lot of reasons to not have you in the tournament.
Right.
So, Matt, we answered Gary's first question. So before we get to his second question, let's talk about, where is it? I forgot to put a question in here, too. I'll get to it here in a second. I'm all over the place. So, Matt, let's talk about going through that schedule, okay? This week, we have Santa Clara and LMU. Wins or losses this week? Wins.
Wins.
All right. Then St. Mary's on the road at St. Mary's. I'm going to chalk that up as a loss. Matt?
I'm also going loss here.
Okay. Home Pacific, they're terrible. Win.
Yeah, that's, I'm not losing any sleep over that. Come on.
Home, San Francisco, they're decent, but I'm going to give it a W at the
Mariners. I'll take the win. Take the win.
On the road at San Diego, do they get distracted by the lovely San Diego weather? I say no. Victory.
Yeah, negative. That's a win.
Or maybe it'll rain the whole time they were there, like for the bowl game.
Wouldn't it just be poetic?
At I'm home not even sure what that means. Pepperdine, the worst team in the conference, W.
Yep.
Road games against Pacific and Santa Clara, WW.
WW.
Then it's Loyola Marymount back at home, win.
Yep.
Gonzaga in the Marriott Center, loss.
Yeah.
Portland at home, win.
Win.
Well, they're okay. They're not terrible. Pepperdine again, and they're terrible, win. San Francisco on the road, Matt.
That's, I'm going with a loss.
That's where we're both predicting losses. Back home against San Diego, a W. Matt, St. Mary's in the Marriott Center, three with a couple of games left.
I'm going to say that's a win.
I am too, so let's plug them in for a W. And then it ends with road games against Portland and Gonzaga. Matt, I'm a little worried about that Portland game, sandwiched there between St. Mary's, between the Gales and the Zags. I'm still going to give them a W, but that is one where Portland is good enough that a kind of, you know, if say we come off a high in that St. Mary's game, that could be that quote-unquote letdown type of game, but I'll give them a W. How about you?
Yeah, come on. Come on.
All right. And then on the road at Gonzaga, I can't give it to him, Matt. The Gonzaga is just too good. So,
yeah, I can't give him the win there.
So, Matt, at this point, we would expect a one win loss of 23-8. I think if they go through this, Matt, they're one of the last four teams in the tournament. What do you think? 23-8? 23 wins is a lot. Quality wins, you know, at this point so far, the best win that BYU has is, looking for it, I think it's Cal State Bakersfield. That's not a great, no, sorry, Colorado. Colorado's the best win, easy. They're a top 70 team. Okay, so you got that win against Colorado. You have that glaring, terrible loss against Utah Valley. And then we were saying you would also add a win against St. Mary's and only one non-St. Mary's Gonzaga loss. I think they're the last four in. I think they have to play, but I think they make it. What do you say?
I think with that type of schedule, I think you're a bubble team, and you could go either way.
Yeah, absolutely. At that point, I mean, if they get a win against Gonzaga, then our whole conversation changes, right?
Oh, if they win the Gonzaga game, if they split with Gonzaga?
If they split with Gonzaga, that's you now have a top 10 win.
Yeah,
right?
I think you're in. I think you're in. If you split with, if you can do that, you're probably in. But see, the thing with being, you know, last four in or a bubble team is that now, like, it all depends on what's going on in other conferences and with other teams. Like, you lose complete control of your destiny at that point. But I think if you can, if you pull in there with another win and it's against Gonzaga, I think you probably get yourself into the dance.
Okay, Matt. Does that mean the West Coast Conference gets three teams in? I think it's a very good chance that, I mean, St. Mary's and Gonzaga would have to absolutely fall off the bus not to get in at this point. Gonzaga, I don't think there's much chance at all. St. Mary's would just have to have some absolutely terrible, terrible conference season, right?
Yeah, something crazy would have to happen.
So I think that's I'm going to give it a better than 50% chance that West Coast Conference has three teams in. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
So I think there is a good chance. If you look at, Matt, the rankings of conferences, so at MasseyRatings.com, the West Coast Conference is the 11th best conference as of today in the land. Of the mid-majors, they're only behind the American, the Atlantic 10, and the Mountain West and the Missouri Valley. So one of the good things about this year is that because of how well the top two teams are playing, and there's a couple other teams like San Francisco, Loyola Marymount, maybe Portland, that are not terrible, This league looks okay this year, and that'll help BYU's conference chances for sure.
Yep.
Conference chances. I mean, tournament chances.
Tournament chances, right.
For sure.
I think we all knew what you meant. Come on.
Yeah, come on. All right, Matt, so let's go back to football here for a minute before we preview some bowl games we don't know anything about. Matt, last week I, on our post-game show after the bowl, I got on Ty Detmer's case a little bit.
Yeah, right? You did.
So on Twitter, Jeff Johnson, that's at JeffJBYU, he says, nice work on the bowl review podcast. I'm with Adam on the jury still being out on Detmer as the offensive coordinator. Offense underperformed, in my opinion. Gosh darn it, I just remembered it, Matt. So let's, before we answer this question, I'm going to reverse. TJ Haws as the point guard. That's the question I forgot. We got it from email, that's why I couldn't find it. Tim Jacobson asked us about an article on VanquishTheFoe.com about Haws as the point guard. Matt, we've talked about this before. Do you want Haws as the point guard going forward in the crunch time for BYU? Or should LJ Rose be playing that role?
I'm still kind of stuck on LJ Rose, but I feel like I shouldn't be. It's time to move on.
But here's my problem. I don't know if Haws is the answer yet. So I'm going to stick with Rose for now, but I think Haws, by midway through conference play, might be able to fill that role. But right now, he's not playing much better than Rose is. So I'm not sure you're getting what you want out of that, Tim. I think, in honesty, there may be it may be just swapping one problem for another. If he can hit more threes than Rose, because right now defenses are just playing so off, LJ. I mean, he's getting that treatment that Tony Parker got in the NBA before he learned how to shoot. It's bad. So we gotta figure that out on the perimeter.
Yep.
All right. So let's go back to football, Matt. I trashed. Oh gosh, losing the voice here. Trashed Detmer last week. Jeff agreed. A couple of people on Twitter did not agree. They think he needs time to put in his full system, Matt. So here's what I'm gonna say. Okay. Here's my response to that. What does that mean? Okay? I keep hearing people say this like it's a fact. Well, he hasn't put in his full system. Why didn't he put in his full system? Didn't he have a full spring? Didn't he have a full fall camp? Didn't he have a senior quarterback? An experienced group of wide receivers? Why didn't he have his full system in? Is it like the most complicated offensive system ever known to man? Like, I don't believe in giving people first-year passes. Do you?
Am I being too harsh? I don't think you give them a first-year pass. You don't give the first year isn't just a practice year, right? I mean, you're still paying him. But I do think it's fair to say that there is some advantage that is gained. And when you have a quarterback who's been in a system for multiple years – and had a chance to really learn it and know it.
Okay.
You know, it increases his chances of success.
But that's
and
different.
In this case, you don't have anybody, you don't have a single player who's been in this system for longer than a year. So when I talk about how, well, he hasn't been able to install the whole system, because I think I've said that before.
You have.
The way I'm looking at it is that there's nobody here with who's developed inside of this system.
Okay.
I think you have to at least get into year two before you have somebody like that. You have a quarterback who played a season in it, the offensive lineman in it who played a season in it. In our case though, next year, I mean, look at the specialists, right? Look at your position players. You have a new quarterback. You have a new starting running back. I mean, you have players who've been in practice. But a lot of your skills guys are going to be first-year starters. So okay. I don't know what you really gain anyway.
If you're going to be a great offensive coordinator at the college level, then your system has to be absorbed quickly. Just has to. You're changing players every year. You're going to change quarterbacks every couple of seasons. And you can't have a year where, gosh, the full system wasn't able to be put in. It has to be able to be put in all the time. Now, I get it. He hasn't recruited players for a system. You talked about, you know, everybody was new instead of just having, usually you're going to have about half of your team is new, right? So that's a big deal. And they clearly don't have any tight ends on the roster that probably are at the level that he would like to use the tight end, right? That's fair. I get it. I totally get it. I just look at this offense and I say, it went backwards versus last year's offense in almost every single measurable category, even if you control for the schedule, Matt. I just think, all those things aside, a great offensive coordinator has a better offense this year with what he had. He had Taysom Hill, he had Jamal Williams, he had an experienced group of wide receivers. Maybe not the most talented, but experienced. Yeah, there were some issues on the offensive line, but I think the talent was there for a top 40 offense, and we got like a top 60 offense. So that's why I'm being tough on Detmer. I'm not saying he can't improve, but I don't think we can just say, well, he'll automatically get better next year. The offense will, because he'll have had more time to implement his system.
I don't think the offense automatically gets better. I do think he has more time to develop his system and develop players inside of it.
Fair enough.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that anybody gets any better.
Yep, it does not. So this year, Matt, according to Football Outsiders, BYU's offense was the 60th best in all the land. So not great. Rushing offense was 26th best, so that's all right. Passing offense was the 91st passing offense in the country. Now, this is advanced statistic. It's their S&P factors in game situations, lots of stuff in there. So it's not just a matter of yards. It's more complicated than that. We did rank as a top 40 efficient offense. Basically, did you get what you wanted to out of the play? A lot of that has to do with how good we were on third downs. And quite frankly, a good chunk of that was, especially in the second half of the season, was just how dangerous Taysom Hill is as a runner on, say, third and six and short or shorter, right?
Right.
Where basically he can take off and get it with his legs. The thing that worried me, Matt, was Taysom's stats were terrible this year. You know, last year he was the 56th best quarterback, according to ESPN this year, in their QBR, which takes into account running. 7th best running quarterback, though if you looked at the beginning of the year, he was like 20th. So that a lot of that happened in the last few years. I mean, in 2013, his best year, he was the 40th best quarterback and the 2nd best running quarterback. Matt, I just think, I know he might physically have not been able to do it earlier in the year, but I think one of the biggest failings of this offense was not letting him run for the first half of the season.
Yeah, the offense seemed to not be designed to take advantage of Taysom's unique skills, right? And that was the unique skills is really what everybody liked about having him be the starter. I mean, yep. It comes down to just pure passing. I think Tanner Mangum is a better just pure passing quarterback. But it was that special set of skills in the vein of Liam Neeson there that everybody wanted out of Taysom, and you just didn't see it.
And physically, he might not have been able to. We talked about early in the season that he was getting caught by defensive linemen from behind. I he wasn't 100% when the season started from a running perspective. The biggest concern for me was his passing seemed to take a step backwards. In 2014, before he got hurt, he was looking really good as a passer. I don't know that Detmer ever really figured out what plays to call for Taysom that would really bring him to a different level as a passer. And that can be an experience thing both on Detmer's standpoint as well as the rest of the coaching staff. Matt, moving on to something a little bit more exciting. For the 26 football team, now that it's all done, Johnny Ashton wants us to name MVPs. All right, so we talked a little bit about this in a previous podcast, but that was pre-bowl game. Offensive MVP, I think we're agreed that it's 100% is definitely Squally Canada.
Oh, boy. We are not on
Jamal the same Williams.
Yeah, is there any easy question, right? Easy. I mean, it has to be.
Easy.
All right. You can't even, I couldn't even make a legitimate argument for somebody else.
No, you couldn't. We'd be wasting airtime. Matt, defensive MVP. We talked a little bit about this pre-bowl. Did your bowl game change your opinion on this?
Well, I do know who I wish it would have been is Longy.
Yes.
And I think that had he been playing at the right position all year, it would have been.
Probably would have been. But who are you going to give it to?
Well, earlier in the season, I would have gone Butch, but then he missed some time.
Okay.
So now who...
You've made a good argument against two people. How about an argument for someone?
So who's somebody that was there consistently in clutch situations and delivered?
Oh, I know who you're going to say.
Who was it that consistently made a play for the defense that changed the whole course of a game?
Did he happen to have had a big interception against Wyoming?
Who did that? He did. I'm going with Kainakua.
I think that's a solid choice. I'm actually going to go with Steady Fred Warner.
I couldn't blame you for that. I wouldn't kick you out of the house.
I thought he was really good. I think you can make an argument for Nakua. I think Powell would have been probably the easy choice had he played all year.
Yes,
or maybe not easy choice, but he would have been in that conversation as well.
And I think if Longy had been playing linebacker all year, he'd be projected as a draft pick.
Okay. Johnny also asks us off of Facebook, best freshman. That one's easy to me.
Who'd you go there?
Troy Warner.
Warner, yeah.
He was, for a freshman to be as good as he was this year as a defensive back, that's pretty darn rare. Now, he's got a world of talent, but I think sky's the limit for that kid. He was good. I mean, he had some bad plays this year. Defensive backs, unfortunately, when they make a mistake, it's often a very large chunk of yards.
Yeah, a six-point mistake.
Yeah, but he tackles well. He covers well. He's aggressive. They can use him. You know, later on in his career, he's going to be all over the field. So I go with Troy Warner. How about you?
Yeah, I just don't know who else you go with there, right? I mean, what other freshman made the kind of impact he did? It's got to be him.
No, I think it's got to be him. Matt, most improved. I've got one in mind for this. Do you have something in mind, or I can go first?
Most improved. You go first on this one. This one was hard for me.
I'm not going to give it to a player. I'm going to give it to
a unit. I'm going to go with a unit.
We're both on the same place, offensive line.
Yeah.
When the season started, obviously they did not have the five guys they thought they would have. This became, by the end of the year, one of the best run-blocking units around. I mean, obviously Jamal can make even a mediocre offensive line look good, but they really did do a good job here. I would also say from a – and this is maybe because of that one pancake block, but honorable mention to Jonah Turneman, who when he first came, I did not see that type of run-blocking out of him. Whatever got into his cereal, keep eating it, buddy, because that pancake block was great.
That was hilarious. But most improved. And to hear Jamal say that he wanted to point at the guy on the ground when he ran by, that's hilarious.
Jamal's awesome. But
do you know who I might give a most improved to if as a unit if we just did year on year?
Sure, yeah.
Tight ends.
Tight ends, sure. They actually existed.
And not a huge factor, but much more important role in 2016 than 2015.
Absolutely, and we didn't have our most important tight end be a defensive lineman switched at the end of the year.
Yeah, awkward.
Like last year. So Matt, and special teams MVP, for me it's easy. I'm going to go with Johnny Rugby.
Oh, it's got to be. I mean, Who pins them deep like that? Well, except for, the one run out of the end zone.
You could also give it to our kick coverage units because for the first year in quite a few years, I wasn't holding my breath every time we kicked the ball or punted that it was going to come back for 20 yards or more.
And was it Michael Davis who caught a couple of those inside the five?
Davis
kept him out of the end zone?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. So
that's pretty good stuff.
That's pretty good. So, Matt, let's talk bowl games.
Oh, boy.
We got a bunch of bowl games to talk about.
I'm watching this Baylor-Boise State, and I get a little chippy. Get a little chippy out there, these Boise State guys.
Oh, wait a second. You mean a Baylor team acting a little classless? That doesn't make sense.
No, I'd say the Boise State team is being chippier than the Baylor guys.
Also not unheard of. right?
Yeah, I guess that's
also
true.
not unheard of. Let's see. Let's pull up the bowls games here. Where is the bowl game schedule? You'd think I would have had this up already.
You can have that ready to go. Yeah, it's not like we've never done this before.
This is my first time, actually. I'm surprised.
Welcome
you
to the podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. All right, so what do we got? Man, I can't find that cool page I usually use.
Loser. Where is it?
Oh, it's called the scoreboard, Matt. Maybe you've heard of that. All right, let's get on to the games that have yet to happen.
Here
so
we go.
Starting with Wednesday, if you're listening to this before then, Wednesday the 28th, 1 p.m. is the New Era Pinstripe Bowl, a bowl that should never happen because you shouldn't be playing bowl games in New York City on the 28th of December. But regardless, number 23, Pitt, 8-4 out of the ACC against 6-6 Northwestern. Pitt's favored by 4.5. I'm going with the Panthers.
Taking the Panthers here, even though their name is Pitt.
Pitt. Never want to put that on a wedding invitation.
Unfortunate.
Reference, do you know what I'm talking about?
What is the name? Father of the Bride.
Father of the Bride, well done, sir. So Pitt, we'll take Pitt there. Matt, percent chance you see any of this game?
100%.
I'd put it, for me, at like 45 or 50. Matt, would you want BYU to play in the New Era Pinstripe Bowl? No.
Nope.
Zero interest. None. Zero. Tomorrow as well at 4:30 is the Russell Athletic Bowl in Camping World Stadium in Orlando, Florida. Number 16, West Virginia, 10-2 against 8-4 Miami. Matt, Miami is favored by 2.5. I'm going with West Virginia.
I'm also taking the Mountaineers.
Underrated. Matt, percent chance to see any of this game? 100%
high.
For me.
100%.
Okay, so Matt, you know what? I really should have saved Justin's question for now. I totally spaced. That's why he's asking it. The Foster Farms Bowl in Santa Clara, California, 6-6 Indiana against 8-4 and ranked 19th in all of the land. Utah's favored by 5.5. I think Utah will win by more than 5.5, as much as it pains
me
to say that.
Utah beats these guys by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, so Matt, percent chance you see any of the Foster Farms Bowl?
100%, baby.
About 100% for me. We'll put it at 99. I do not want to play in either the Russell Athletic Bowl or the Foster Farms Bowl, but I would be okay with the Foster Farms Bowl, I guess, for BYU in the future.
I guess. I mean, you get a Big Ten or a Pac-12 opponent, maybe.
Maybe.
I could get behind it.
The last game on Wednesday, December 28th, is the Advocare V100 Texas Bowl. That is 8-4 Texas A&M against 8-4 Kansas State. The Aggies are favored by 2.5. Matt, I am taking Upset City, the Wildcats from Kansas State.
Oh, man, I was also going to take Kansas State, but I have to disagree with you somewhere, so I'm taking the Aggies.
All right, percent chance to see any of this game? I'm guessing 100.
It's 100%. Yeah.
I'll put in
yeah,
99 for me, and I think I'd be okay with them playing in the Texas Bowl.
I think we've agreed. Any game in Texas is a cool bowl game.
Cool going. We'll do it. On Thursday, December 29th, it starts out with the Birmingham Bowl, 10-2 South Florida, 6-6 South Carolina. Matt, despite South Carolina playing for what conference do they play in?
Yeah.
They are a dog, a 10-point dog to South Florida, and I think that's the right line. I'm picking the Bulls.
Oh, yeah, South Florida wins by at least 10 here.
Gamecocks are terrible. Percent chance to see any of this game on Thursday?
It's high, near 100%.
I'd say 40% for me. We've got some other plans.
You don't watch the early afternoon games, huh?
Sometimes I don't, especially ones that are terrible. Later that afternoon, it's the Belk Bowl, Matt. We thought the Belk Bowl maybe had died. It has not died. It's still alive. Charlotte, North Carolina. 7-5 Arkansas versus 9-4 and ranked 22 Virginia Tech. The Hokies are 7-point favorites. I'm taking the Hokies.
Yeah, taking the Hokies.
The nightcap is the Valero Alamo Bowl in San Antonio, Texas. This is probably the best matchup we've talked about so far in any of these three shows where we've done this. Number 12.
Yeah, this is where they start to get good, right here.
Yes, right here. 9-3 Oklahoma State, 10-3 and hot as all get out, Colorado. Colorado's favored by 3, Matt. I am going with Colorado, basically the biggest turnaround story in college football.
Oklahoma State, baby.
You hate the Pac-12. You just hate them.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, on Friday, Matt.
Even though I should be cheering for Colorado, because isn't that Utah's rival?
Yes, sort of, kind of. They play right towards the end of the year. On Friday, Matt, the morning game is the AutoZone Liberty Bowl in Memphis, Tennessee. That's 7-5 Georgia, 6-6 TCU. Oh, hey, Valero Bowl, percent chance you watch that, 100?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
And would you like them to play in that, BYU to play in that game?
Eh. I would like that one more than either of the other games that day.
Liberty Bowl, Matt, Georgia and TCU, the line is even. I'm taking the Bulldogs.
Are there any winners here?
No, there's only losers. Percent chance you see this game.
Go Dogs.
I'll see it, 100%. I'll have the game on at some point. At 1 o'clock that afternoon, the Hyundai Sun Bowl in El Paso, Texas. 9-3 Stanford without McCaffrey. 8-4 North Carolina. Stanford is favored by 2.5. Matt, I am going with Stanford.
You're going to pick Stanford.
No, I'm not. I'm going with the Tar Heels. I hate Stanford. McCaffrey's out. Big pansy, which is not true, by the way. I don't have any problem with him sitting this bowl game out. Matt, who you got?
Taking North Carolina. I think Stanford's going to struggle.
And you and I agreed on this. I have no problem with him sitting this game out.
No.
Who cares? It's his call.
He's playing. Well, and here's the deal. The way you fix this is an 8-team playoff.
The way you fix this is an 8-team playoff.
You get the top 16 teams are in games that matter. And then beyond that, if he doesn't want to play, then you know what? He doesn't gain anything from playing in this game. And no, don't give me this, he owes it to his team. He doesn't owe anybody a thing.
No, he doesn't. How does he owe it? I mean, listen, I get it. This is, if I was one of his teammates, I'd probably be annoyed, right? Because you want to win this game. Okay? But McCaffrey has to make the best decision for him. Personally,
that's right.
I would play, right? Because you can get injured anytime, in any practice, in any whatever, right? You can get injured any time. So I think sitting out the game is not, but like you said, he doesn't really have anything to gain. He's going to be drafted. He's going to be drafted high. This game is going to change his status. He's got a lot more to lose than he has to gain. But for people like, I saw this on Twitter. You got it into it with a guy. There is no rule you can put in place to force these guys to do it. And any rule that they would try to put in place would probably open up a lawsuit that would get a collective bargaining and a union put in place. So stop it with that we're going to come up with some rule to force.
Think that trying to enforce some type of rule is really problematic. I wasn't trying to, I did get in a conversation about this on Twitter one night, but I wasn't trying to be argumentative. I honestly just don't know how you would enforce it.
No, you could.
I think it's extremely problematic to do that on several fronts.
I don't even want to.
And why, if you're him, right? I mean, I totally understand why you don't play. I mean, you've been banged up all year. And you look at a couple of these guys that are doing this. You look at McCaffrey, you look at Fournette, okay? And you just use those two examples. They've been banged up all year. They played hurt.
Yep.
Okay, so don't give me this. They're not giving it up for their team. These guys went out and they played hurt.
Yeah, put their future NFL earnings on the line every week.
To try and put their team in a position to win a conference championship or get into a playoff.
Yep.
And they didn't get there.
Yep.
And now you're going to go play an exhibition game, which is essentially what this amounts to.
How dare you call the Hyundai Sun Bowl in its grand tradition an exhibition game?
So, but what you say, I'm not saying the bowl games don't matter, because the bowl games do matter. The players love them. I love them.
We're
players
talking about these bowl games right now.
Yeah, and I'm going to watch all of them.
Yep,
right.
Love them.
But if you're McCaffrey and you've been playing banged up, and now you got 3 or 4 weeks off, and you're starting to feel pretty good, you're going to go out and play a football game again.
Nope.
Maybe re-aggravate an injury, and that's going to set you back as far as your prep for the combine and all those things. I think you have to really think about not playing.
Yeah,
now,
I agree.
Would I probably play when I was 20, 21 years old? I would have played because I'm crazy like that, right? Yeah. But do I wish these guys would play? I think that McCaffrey should have a Heisman Trophy in his room, in my opinion.
Yeah, unfortunately, he
not this year.
Last year,
but last year I don't understand why he was not the Heisman Trophy winner. This makes no sense to me at all. But you know what does he have to prove? This is not going to change his draft stock one way or another.
No, it is not. Well, Matt, in interest of time, as we're running out of it, it's time to go to the speed round. Are you ready?
All right, here we go. Speed round.
Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl, way too long of a name. 9-3 Nebraska, 8-4 Tennessee. Tennessee's favored by 6.5. I'm taking the upset and the Cornhuskers.
I'm taking the Cornhuskers just because I can't wait for our brother Don to respond to this.
Yes, that is exactly why I'm doing that too. Don and Gene, we still love you. Matt, 100% chance I see some of that game.
Yeah, I'll see some of that game.
Later that afternoon, South Alabama 6-6 against 9-3 Air Force. Air Force is favored by 2 touchdowns. Matt, I'm taking Air Force. If this game didn't happen to overlap with the Music City Bowl, this is the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. There's a 0% chance I would watch it, but there's probably like an 80% chance I see some of it.
I will see some of it, mostly because I'd like to see what South Alabama's football team, their uniforms and all that look like. I have no idea.
There you go. The nightcap.
This is a Division I team?
Yes, it is. Nightcap on Friday night is number 6 Michigan, number 11 Florida State. Hyped matchup. Michigan's favored by 6.5. Matt, I think they win by 2 touchdowns.
Michigan destroys Florida State.
Absolutely destroys them. I don't think people realize just how good Michigan is, and this will make people wonder what the heck they weren't doing in the playoff, but they weren't in there because they lost games. That's how it goes. 100% chance I see some of that game. Yep. Matt, in one of the greatest moronic tragedies and travesties, we're going to have playoff games once again on New Year's Eve, but let's talk about the bowl games before those, because there are two of them that morning. The Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl, 7-4 LSU, 9-3 Louisville. LSU is favored by 3.5. I'm going with Louisville.
Oh, stop.
Am I stupid? Is that dumb?
Yes, it's silly.
Well, I'm going with it anyway. 100% chance I see some of this game.
100% chance I see this game. Right. I live in Baton Rouge.
That's right.
I'm going with the Tigers.
You're going with the Tigers. Smart man. Taxslayer Bowl is at the exact same time, 8-4 Georgia Tech, 7-5 Kentucky. Again, this is not a matchup that if it were at a different day and time, I would not see it. But since it's on during that LSU-Louisville game, I will 100% chance see it. At Georgia Tech, 3.5-point favorites, I'm going to go with the Ramblin' Wreck, right? Isn't that what they call?
Yeah, the Ramblin' Wreck. I'm going to go with the Ramblin' Wreck as well.
All right. 100% chance you see that game, too. I know.
Yep.
Matt, this is the day we've all been waiting for, the college football playoff, invented by that guy that sells Dr. Pepper.
He invented everything.
That's right. At 2 o'clock is the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl in Atlanta. 12-1 Washington, 13-0 Alabama. Alabama is favored by two touchdowns, 14 points. Matt, I really wish this was Alabama and Ohio State in the first round, but it's not. Roll Tide.
Yeah, why would you want? I don't want to give anything away. Roll Tide.
All right. In the next round, it's 11-1 Ohio State, 12-1 Clemson. Ohio State is favored by a field goal. Matt, I'm going with Clemson.
Oh. Stop it.
I'm totally
Buckeyes.
I'm going with the Buckeyes. They're going to roll. That's why I want this game in the first round, because I think Washington earned, by winning their conference, a better seat at the table than Ohio State.
Yeah, and they won't get into the finals because they had to play Alabama first.
Nobody's beaten Alabama this year. So, Matt, we're not going to cover this because it's another week later and we can talk about it on next week's show, but we both think Bama's winning the whole thing, right?
They're taking the whole thing home.
This may be bad for ratings because they may not. It may not be close. Matt, for some unknown reason, there are more games after this. Okay,
makes no sense.
But on Monday the 2nd, which is kind of like New Year's Day for most of us because we get work off, there's the Outback Bowl. 8-4 Florida, 8-4 Iowa. Florida's favored by 3. I'm going with the Gators.
Of all the games that are played after the playoffs, this is one of them, the Outback Bowl with a Florida and an unranked Iowa team. This is silly.
Boo!
I'm taking the Gators, but that's just dumb.
The Cotton Bowl is next, Matt, and 100% chance we see all of these games, by the way, right?
Yes.
Number 15, Western Michigan, undefeated 13-0, gets their shot against 10-3 Wisconsin. Wisconsin is favored by only 8.5. That line is dumb. Wisconsin beats them by 20.
Yep.
Not even close. Wisconsin's defense, Western Michigan may not get past the 50. 4 o'clock that afternoon is the Rose Bowl game presented by Northwestern Mutual. The stupid game that keeps us from being able to have the college football playoff where it belongs on New Year's Day or January the 2nd this year. Because heaven forbid we make this stupid bowl that's who cares about anymore in its tradition. Am I sounding bitter enough? Is the bitterness meter
well,
up?
Well, the thing is, they're playing on the 2nd. Who cares? They're not even playing it on New Year's Day.
But who cares? If the Rose Bowl doesn't want to participate in the playoffs, kick them to the freaking curb. I mean, if they don't want to put the games on the day, New Year's Eve is so dumb. People do stuff on New Year's Eve already. Not football related. Having those games on New Year's Eve is stupid. It's just dumb. And all because, oh, heaven forbid, the Rose Bowl would have to be on New Year's Eve or something. Oh, my gosh. Kill me now. So, number 9, USC, hottest team in the land, a lot of people think, against number 5, Penn State. I'm going with the Trojans, as much as that pains me, but they are playing so well.
Oh, Penn State.
Ooh, look at you with the upset. And then, Matt, the last game is the Sugar Bowl. 8-4, Auburn, 10-2, Oklahoma. Oklahoma's favored by a field goal. I'm going with the Sooners.
Yeah, Boomer Sooner, baby.
I think Auburn is overrated, and I think Oklahoma wins that. Well, Matt, this has been a show. A long show.
Yeah, we ran through a lot of bowls just now.
On a holiday week in which I don't know who's listening, but if you made it to the end, what is our hashtag today?
Hashtag Rose Bowl is lame.
Yes, Rose Bowl is lame. Hashtag Rose Bowl is lame if you made it all the way to the end of this podcast. Matt, again, I'd tell folks if you made it to the end and you haven't subscribed to us on iTunes, I think that's very unlikely. But if you haven't, go to iTunes, search for the Rise and Shout podcast, and subscribe to us there or on your favorite podcasting application. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Rise and Shout, on Twitter at BYU_Rise Shout. And you can send us emails if you prefer that type of method of communication. Rise and Shout Pod, one word, Rise and Shout Pod @gmail.com. Matt, anything to add before we sign off?
This is the greatest and worst time of the year for college football, right? Yes. So it's tons of really good games, but it's almost over. So everybody take some time and enjoy it.
Yes.
Because you're going to miss it when it's gone.
Yes. You will miss it. You will miss it. But luckily, spring football is only a few short months away. Matt, we will be back next week to talk about the college football championship. We'll talk about the first couple games of West Coast Conference play. And in 2 weeks, Matt, we're going to have our tribute show. Oh, and next week we'll preview St. Mary's for sure. But Matt, in 2 weeks we're going to have our tribute to the career of Jamal Williams show.
It's going to be a good one.
So it'll be a good one. We'll have a guest or two to talk about Jamal and his awesomeness. And so stay tuned for that one. Thank you guys for downloading and listening. We appreciate it. As always, share this with your friends. Share this with your neighbors. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.